Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey everybody, I'm Rima.
And I'm Jason.
And this is Strange Indeed, a podcast dedicated to the show Lock and Key.
Today we'll be covering the third episode of season one called Head Games. I was going to ask you something about this episode. Mm-hmm. Shoot, I forgot what it was. Oh, I guess I was just going to ask if you, what your headspace would be like.
Probably a place nobody wants to go. I don't
dark
know.
Dark with cobwebs and slime.
No, that's gross. No, it would be dark, dark and twisty.
It's private. Probably, that's the thing about it.
I think the inside of my head would be like a maze that you'd never like find your way out.
Get turned around.
Yeah. And just never figure it out.
One thing, you know, what I thought if that key popped up and, you know, I had friends around or anybody else, I'd be like, let me go in there and check it out. And then, you know, maybe I'll let you in, but I got to see what it's all about first. I wouldn't want to just go in for the first time with somebody else, you know, just in case.
Yeah.
Who knows what the hell's in there?
I'd be afraid of what would be in. I would be afraid for someone going in my head. So, yeah, I don't feel the first time around should be with someone else. I definitely want to go by myself and be like, okay, do we really want to let someone in here? Probably not. Probably not. It would be, I'm thinking of like the, like an episode of Legion or something, like the most trippy episode of Legion, or maybe that episode with David and Sydney, season two, episode mm-hmm. four, I think it was, one of our favorite episodes that is always mentioned.
Yeah, I don't know how many people listening watch that show, but definitely this episode made me think about it a lot because it's taking these psychological concepts and turning them into these real physical, surreal kind of spaces and objects and things like that. And I really, you know, Reem and I both love that show. We did our separate podcast all about it for 3 seasons. And that was one reason why I really liked this episode, because I just like that kind of stuff. I think it's really interesting. I'm always into psychology, and I just think it's really interesting when they turn it into something physical that people can actually explore and manipulate.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I thought of a lot. And that's just, I think, a good way to get people to go watch Legion. So go watch. It's over now.
If you like this episode, yeah.
Yeah. If you like this episode, you should definitely watch Legion.
Legion's awesome because it's three seasons. It's really creative and different, and it's you know, a whole story all wrapped up fairly quickly. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It'll make you feel schizophrenic. So if you really don't want that, maybe you shouldn't watch it.
But in a really good, fun way. If you can think of being schizophrenic in a really fun, entertaining way.
I know some people were disturbed in that first season. They're like, they're kind of thrown off balance, but I loved it. And it really did come around to being a little more straightforward. Season two is mostly a romance, and it's great.
Yeah, really good. So, yeah, it's always good to talk a little bit about Legion. I really do miss that show since it wrapped.
Yeah.
Well, with that being said, let's go ahead and start talking about this episode with our top five. So do you want to kick us off this week with your number five?
Sure. Let's talk about how the head key works. I'd been waiting for this one. I was hoping, you know, I think it comes a little later, not later, but not right away in the comic series, but I think they kind of moved it up here a little bit. Right. So I'm glad that they wanted to explore it. And so let's talk about it. So we've only seen it work so far with Bodhi and Kinsey. And here are some of the different characteristics. First, you obviously you stick it in your head, a doorway that makes sense for your head space opens up. For Bodhi, it's a toy chest. For Kinsey, it's a revolving door, presumably like you'd find outside a mall leading into a mall. Mm-hmm. Then you enter a space that makes sense, I guess, for your personality or your state of mind. So Bodhi has all these flashing lights and big toys and blocks and a big hippo and this
look like a hungry hippo, like one of the hungry hippos
with his mouth wide open, a toy sports car, and he's they're like, this is awesome. They're all stoked, except for Tyler, who's seems a little concerned. But this part I enjoyed, and I think the music that I've complained about actually fit this part pretty well, because one of the listeners said it well. It's like Harry Potter music. I think Lindsay said that. And this was kind of a Harry Potter scene just filled with wonder. You know, it's not supposed to be eerie or scary at all. So it really fit with that. It's when it kills the tension that is when I don't like it. But anyway, I didn't notice it as much this episode. So anyway, Kinsey's is more like a mall, I guess, because she's a teenager. And although that's a bit outdated these days, malls are disappearing. But anyways, I thought it was pretty cool that that meant there was a map to stuff. And you see, I looked at the list. It's mostly, I think, about memories. Ninth grade, dad memories, climbing trees with Ty, worst
dance
Halloweens.
Moves.
Yeah, bad hair days, boys I like, boys I don't like. All kinds of stuff like that. Magic keys, question mark. I wish she would have gone to that one. But lies I've told. There's pretty cool times I laughed until I cried. And I like that she said it's so organized. And he's like, even your head is a control freak. So it makes sense for her head. Mine would not be like that.
Mine would not either.
So then, you know, speaking of memories, at least in Kinsey and Bodhi's, it was sort of similar. In his, he opened up that Jack in the Box, and in hers, there were just these kind of glowing cubes. But you visit a memory, and for Bodhi, he visited the time his dad told him a bedtime story, and they were all just there, like they're in the space. But I noticed Kinsey tried to touch her father, and her hand went right through him. And I've been doing so much VR lately, it really reminded me of that, except in much higher resolution. It looked more real. So then another characteristic is that when Kinsey starts thinking about Tyler, because she's looking at little Tyler in bed, she jumps to where he's hitting that guy. And so I guess if you think about something, you can jump to a different space, which is scary. That's one reason that might give me pause to go in there, because you could end up anywhere. Another characteristic, Bodhi says feelings can become living things there. So he sees his glee jumping up and down on the trampoline going, yeah. So that was super cute. And then Kinsey meets the personification of her fear, which it was interesting. It wasn't like an afraid thing. It was a mean, aggressive version of herself that attacked Tyler. And why do you think her personification of fear did that?
I don't know that I'm right, but what I got from it is that because her fear is such a strong part of her and who she is right now, that it just took over. Like that's the strongest part of her right now. It's so consuming right now. Yeah.
Interesting. I think, I didn't think of that, but I think there's definitely something to that. I also thought maybe it's kind of like when you back a cat into a corner, its back goes up and it's like, like fight or flight response.
In a protective mode. Yeah. Like it was trying to somehow protect her or something.
Well, it was attacking her, but I just think that was sort of like the fear response. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. the fear response is to attack.
Oh, yeah, that makes maybe. Sense.
But yeah. Then, so those are the characteristics. The last thing about that I thought was interesting is Bodhi wants to use it on Tyler or Kinsey right away. And they're like, no. And I like that. He's like, what's the point of having magic keys if we can't even use them? And last week you and me were saying, well, if the mirror key was our first introduction to this, we might be a little more cautious, but I'm glad that Bodhi has this attitude because it's way more fun. And he's a little kid, so.
He's a little kid. Sense. Yeah. I feel like I don't know how old the actor is in real life. I haven't looked it up, but I think in the show he's supposed to be only like, what, 6 or something. A 6-year-old. Maybe, you know, yeah. He's having a blast. He's like, hey, my head's an awesome place to be. So
right. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. So I love that they're taking their time with this. And right now, they've only used it pretty much to just explore their head spaces and revisit memories. But now Kinsey's buried her fear and possibly killed it. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens next. But anyway, we don't get to see that yet.
Not yet. I don't know. I'm still working my way through the comics and things are just a little bit different, which I won't talk about here. But, you know, I feel like that was maybe too easy. So I feel like that's probably going to come rearing its ugly head sometime down the road. But yeah,
like later tonight when we're done with this podcast. We get to watch it.
You know, that was a really good personification of fear. I mean, how it had like these inhuman type movements and it was kind of menacing and, you know, the way that, you know, she kind of shifted and presented herself and, you know, all that was kind of freaky. I'd be scared. So like that was coming after me. Tyler was right to be scared. He's like, what the hell?
Yeah. And it was, I mean, it was interesting, you know, she went in there to get it at the end and that was brave. Like that's scary, man. I don't know if I would be brave enough to do that. So it's sort of weird. Like it's kind of a paradox. Like she wants to kill her fear and she has to be really courageous in order to do it before it's killed. But, she poked it with that poker the first time. So I think that was sort of cathartic for her because she was all down on herself because the first time when she was sitting in that room with the tarp, plastic, whatever, she wanted to use the poker but was paralyzed. But anyway, I'm getting way ahead of myself. I was actually done with my number 5.
That's okay. It's fun to talk these out. We could just sit here and just keep, you know, analyzing this whole thing for a long time. That was a really good number 5. Yes. And it's funny because that was a lot of what my number 5 was as well. I was just kind of going through my notes. I know I even try to like mix some things up a little bit because I don't like to do my top 5 in like really in particular order. It's not like really number 5 and then working down to number 1. I have them numbered because that's what we do.
You know what?
I
usually used to do the one that I'm most excited to talk about first, even though it's number 5, just so I can make sure to get to it.
That's a good idea.
But usually also there's an order that kind of makes sense. Like some things make sense more to talk about before you get to other things.
Yeah.
But then when you get the other person in there that throws a wrench in the works and then it just goes in random directions, which is really fun too.
Yep. Well, we'll have to find a way to mix this up a little bit. And it's weird because we don't coordinate at all. You know, we just do our lists and that's how it turns out. But the only additional things that I'll say is I really did, you know, I thought it was appropriate. Like Bodhi's inside of his head was like an arcade, all fun and games. I saw Spyro. I love that he had like the Spyro video game kind of going in the back. If I'm a huge fan of Spyro, my daughter, when she was little, it was like her absolute favorite game ever. So I have spent many, many hours with Spyro playing
Which
the game
one is
myself.
That? What is it?
The little dragon.
Oh, I don't know if I ever played that. Oh, I thought that was a console. It's a console game, right?
Yeah, PlayStation. Yeah. No, oh, well, it might be on others, but we played it on PlayStation. Love Spyro. Little Spyro the Dragon. He's this cool little badass. Spits fire and headbutts. And you got to collect all the jewels and you can fly. Oh, it's amazing. Absolutely fun. So I really love that.
You didn't have a Grand Theft Auto in there.
No, well, he's only six, and he was probably raised appropriately, whereas my six-year-old was playing Grand Theft Auto back in the day. Yes, I'm that parent. But it's fine. Hey, she's turned out fine. She's not really running over people like she did in the video game, and she's not carjacking people, so she turned out fine.
As far as you know.
As far as I know. I haven't had any phone calls to bail her out yet. So far, I've been successful, so I'll take it. I'll take every day. I thought it was fun how he accessed his memories with the Jack in the Box. I hated Jack in the Box as a kid, but this was a fun little way, I guess, to access his memories.
And nothing popped out. So.
Nothing popped out. I was not a fan. But then Kinsey's, like you said, hers were very organized, you know, where she could just like touch that box. I thought that was kind of cool how she could just touch it and that cube would kind of like pop out and she would grab it. It was very futuristic and very colorful.
This whole thing kind of reminded me a little bit of Maniac, too. Did it you at all?
Yeah. A little bit, yeah. I forget that you watched that show.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah, it was really good. Sean and I really enjoyed that one. I don't think enough people were talking about it or watching it, but yeah, it did have a little bit of a feel like that.
Going kind into another, these surreal spaces.
Yeah, and kind of trippy, little mind-bending. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's really good. I didn't think of that at all. I thought a lot about Legion for some reason in this episode. I also, like you were talking about how all of her, like it was very organized. She had like all these different stores for each part of her like memories and for different parts of her brain. But then when she went into dad memories and that door opened and it was, you know, stories her dad told her, there was also dad's music I pretend to hate. And I laughed so hard at that. And the reason I do is because it reminds me of my kid, where she will, you know, because I like something, she might like it, but she won't admit it to me. She'll hate it and tell me that she hates it, but she secretly likes it. So I thought that was really funny, and I kind of giggled at that, thinking, aha, there are other kids that do that. And then when they, and I think as far as like everything else that we talked about that you mentioned in your top five, but I wanted to kind of skip ahead when they come back out of Bodhi's head, you know, and Bodhi's like, you know, when Tyler takes the key away from him, he's like, I think I'm just going to hang on to these. You know, I don't think you should be the one to have them, and you need to be telling us if you find any more keys. And when he talks about, you know, oh, there's evil well lady that's lurking around, they're just like, oh, okay. They ask no questions. And I don't know if that's because they don't believe him or if they're just, they seem so dismissive of it. And I guess it is because he's a little kid, but it's like no one believes a little kid and they're almost always right. And I just feel like they're pretty casual about the keys. Like they're just like, okay, yeah, we're just going to step into Bodhi's head. No big deal. We're just going to step back out. Oh, there's an evil well lady. You know,
I'm not feeling that. I see other people are like that too. And it seems like they're kind of surprised and they had that experience with their mom where she doesn't remember it. So they were pretty freaked out by that. You know, then Kinsey was going on and on about it as they were getting to school the next day. And Tyler's like, everyone thinks we're weird already. Can we just not talk about that here? So yeah. I think it would be just, if they just kept registering, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe this is happening. It would get old. And I think they're doing
maybe
just enough. That's my own personal opinion, but I've definitely read other people share what you're saying right now too.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what I want or what I expect. I don't know if I really have any expectations. Maybe I'm thinking of my own reaction. Like if I'm sitting here and I'm seeing like my little brother, because I have, you know, a little brother, and you know, if I had walked in and saw him with a key sticking out of the back of his neck and he pops out of this toy chest out of nowhere, you know, in his room, I'd be like, what the frig is going on here? You know, what are these keys? And you know, I think, but
they,
that's probably me and my reaction. I don't know. I feel it's maybe fine. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's just me though. But yeah, I just felt, I was like, gosh, I'd be freaking out. But that's my reaction. I know that not everyone reacts in the same way. It just feels like they're just like, oh, okay, yeah, this is pretty cool. We'll just hang on to these keys. And if that well lady comes around, just let us know. I'm like, dude, she is like, she's doing some pretty evil shit out there. She's a threat. And
They like, don't oh, know okay. that though, but I think they do believe something because they're like, they don't want him to keep the keys, so they know that there's possibly dangerous. But I think too that, you know, he's like telling her about the well lady just so they know that it's important to guard these keys. And so that Kinsey's like, well, here's what we're gonna do. Tyler can keep the mirror key and I'll take the head key. I think one reason why she did that is because whether she's consciously aware of it or not at this point, she's intrigued by it. She's like, oh, I can use this to explore because I need some supernatural therapy right now.
Yeah. And I think she kind of wanted to see her dad too. It was kind of a way to see those memories a little bit of her dad.
That's right. Yeah. Think about that. Yeah. And I'm sure we'll get to this, but Bodhi's using the ghost key for that too. So
yeah.
Yeah. They're all just sort of trying to take advantage of the weirdness of it all.
Yeah, I would too. Okay. What's your number four?
My number four is a bit long, but I really think that this episode is a lot about Kinsey dealing with her fear and having a lot of trouble with it.
Mm-hmm.
And some signs of that are what happened with her and Scott. And I think Scott is obviously a really nice guy. He's cute. He's interesting. And I think she sees all that, but she's still really tentative about him.
Mm-hmm.
And when he asks her out to the cover band of horses concert. And she's like, well, wait, is this a date? And he says, no, that's antiquated. And I never make anyone feel obligated to social construct. So let's just call it a hang. What did you think of that response?
I think he is picking up on her, on, you know, how she's kind of being a little skittish. Mm-hmm. And I think he's trying to make her feel at ease because I think he really likes her. And I think he probably does want it to be a date, but he's trying to make her feel comfortable and make her feel at ease and wants her to hang out with him. So
you thought it was a good,
I thought it was a good approach.
Yeah, I did too. I totally do. I mean, totally. I think in general, that's a good approach because I actually agree. It's not always smart to label things because you kind of get pressured to conform to the social idea of what it's supposed to be. But then I think sometimes people can get mad at that. Like, come on, just call it a date. What is this? You know, but this wasn't one of those cases. This was a case where, like you said, she was not comfortable and he wanted to make her feel comfortable. And I think she appreciated that because she does like him. And when he called her Rocky Road, she smiled and it was really sweet. And I think they have great chemistry.
Yeah, I think they if they make it there, they would, you know, make a cute couple. He really seems sweet on her, and he does, I think, seem to kind of put her at ease. And like you said, he did kind of make her feel comfortable. Laugh there. Yeah.
Yeah. So she tells her mom that she doesn't want to go because she doesn't want to screw it up. And she feels guilty, I think, about screwing up the splattering. And and before that, she freaked out while they were watching a movie. So she's already had a couple of incidents, and both of those things go back to her just still being freaked out about what happened about her dad, which is at the core of all this. I mean, that whole thing just really shook her foundations, and it's having a negative impact on her life. And she's just, you know, she's got a lot of fear, and her mother says she overthinks everything. So I think maybe she already kind of had some of this going on before that, but that whole thing really exacerbated it, and it's like a post-traumatic disorder thing now.
Yeah, and it's only been 3 months.
Right.
You know, since they've lost their dad, and now they've lost their dad, and then they've moved across the country to a place, a new school, and so there's a lot going on.
All this freaky crap going on. But now, I mean, it's just really fortuitous that Bodhi happened to find this head key, because it's a way, I mean, she decides she wants to use it and she's afraid, but she still wants to. And I think it's because you said she wanted to visit her dad, so maybe that's a big part of it. But I was thinking also she just wants to see if she can figure out her, like a therapy, you know, just kind of see if she can get any intuition on how to get out of this fear spiral that she's in.
I thought a big part of it was also see her dad. But yeah, I think you're right with that too.
Yeah. And that's what I love that. I mean, I'm really interested. I think it's admirable. You know, it's like going to therapy or just doing self-help or, you know, when you feel like you're not at your best. And so you do some self-exploration and figure out where you could use some work or some change or whatever. That's kind of the supernatural version of that. But, anyway, she goes in, she meets her personification of fear, which I think was the most important thing that happened that first time. And I also think it's significant that she invited, or she was okay with Tyler going in there with her. It shows she has trust in him, but also that maybe she was afraid to go by herself. But then she does go by herself. Like she almost gets up the courage to go to the concert with Scott. She even shows up, backs out at the last second. And I think that's when she decided, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to kill my fear so I can freaking function in the world.
Right.
And we don't get to see her do it, but we see it wriggling around in that bag that she zipped it up in, and she has a bloody knife. So maybe she stabbed it a few times, but it seems like it's still alive, but then she buries it. So I don't know if it's dead, but I think at least for now it's buried.
Mm-hmm.
And is she in the real world when we saw that? 'Cause she was in a forest, but we saw the well lady there spying on her.
I thought she was. I thought she dragged
it out.
Yeah, dragged it out of her head because she needs it out of her head.
Right.
You know, I think she's dragged it through that door from her head and dragged it out because as long as it's somewhere in her head, like I don't know if she knows of a place where you can. I mean, maybe if she thought it's her head, I guess she can construct it however she likes, you know, and lock it in some dark room or something and not have it out lurking about like it was. But I guess this is more of a physical taking it literally out of her head.
Yeah. I think that, I don't think we can know for sure. I guess there's a chance that I'm calling her the well lady now, because that's what everybody's calling her, that she followed her through the revolving door into her own head. But I think we're supposed to think that no, Kinsey drug it out of there.
Yeah.
And buried it outside.
She wasn't in a mall space, so yeah. I assume she's in the real world that we're not actually in her head. But you know, and you know, you talk about that, and I agree with all of that. And I just wonder though, Kinsey just doesn't have more courage than what she gives herself credit for. You know, she really puts herself down and talks about how fearful she is. Like when they were revisiting the memory that she had of when Sam Lesser, after he had shot their dad and shot their mom, and she's hiding under the table with Bodhi trying to stay quiet. And she's like, you know, I saw that poker and I could have grabbed it and went after him. And I didn't, you know, talking about how scared she was. But she was, you know, she showed enough courage to, you know, like you said, she went in and decided, you know, I'm going to take charge of the situation. I, like you said, she knew she needed to make herself better, and make improvements on herself. And I think this is kind of an extreme way of going about it, like literally killing your fear. I think a healthy dose of fear is always a good thing to have in some situations. So I feel like it's, you know, this may not go as well as what she thinks, but I feel like I'm like, you know, hey, Kinsey, I think you're probably a little bit more courageous than what you give yourself credit for. I think that was a brave thing for her to do. And just brave to take that step, brave to like actually take that step and say, I'm going to go do something about it. One, that's brave. And then two, to actually face her actual personification of fear take over it. So
yeah, like if you don't have fear, what's to stop you from walking out into traffic? I mean,
exactly.
You know, like, yeah, I'm hoping this doesn't go exactly the way, you know, everything's all peachy keen from here on out. That would be really boring, but I'm excited to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Is that it for your number four?
Yep.
I like it. That was really good. Really good analysis. I should have been a psychologist, Jason. That was pretty good.
I thought about it.
Too much school, right?
No, I just thought it would be depressing to hear about everybody's problems all the time. And I would just get depressed myself. And they'd be like, yeah, it really sucks. And I'd be like, it really does suck. God.
Don't think you could like be impartial and like detach yourself.
I don't know. I would hope I could, but I wasn't sure. So
yeah, I'm sure probably is a very difficult profession. I'm sure. Well, that was really good. So my number four, if you're going to talk about Kinsey, I want to talk a little bit about Tyler. I don't know if I'll have as much to say, but I, you know, I'm hoping that you will, or at least have some thoughts on that as well. So I think we talked in some of the other episodes, we've talked a little bit about Tyler and his anger that he seems to be feeling. And Kinsey brings it up a lot too, you know, like, you're not the Tyler that I know, and I don't know who you are, and you're scaring me.
That makes more sense this week.
Yeah,
this
definitely. Time. And the guilt, you know, that he is also feeling as well. Like, so we get a more like clear picture of why when we see the scene that he has with Sam Lesser after, you know, he's waiting outside of his dad's office and Sam comes up and, you know, they have that, you know, discussion. And when Sam says, oh, I can't tell you how many times I wake up thinking I got to kill my dad today. And he says it very straight faced. And of course, Tyler is just, you know,
he's not really looking at him.
Not really. Yeah. And he's just kind of like, you know, oh, yeah, well, if you ever decide to kill your dad, do me a favor, kill mine while you're at it. And he
seems like, oh, OK.
Yeah. OK. And then, of course, we know what happens. He does. Yeah. He breaks in. Or he doesn't really break in, I guess. But he, you know, he does kill his dad. And then you're like, OK, now I'm definitely kind of getting that clear picture of that guilt that he feels. And I think then that kind of played out in that scene where he starts beating up that other hockey player, that Chad guy, and he's beating him up.
Because
he
sees Sam's face.
And I think that, you know, that's just where all of that's just got kind of all bubbling to the surface. He's angry because he's, you know, he feels responsible and, you know, for kind of what Sam did. I think he has guilt for that. I think he also had some guilt from when we saw in the first episode when Tyler comes home and he sees Sam holding the gun, you know, to his father, and he's banging on the door, you know, mom, let me in, let me in. We hear his mom say, you know, when they thought it was Tyler at the door, but it was really Sam. She's like, oh, it's Tyler. He probably forgot his key again. And, you know, his dad's saying something like, oh, he, you know, needs to be more responsible. And she's like, oh, just give him a break, you know. Well, if he had had his key, you know, he wouldn't be banging on the door. He might have been able to come in and distract Sam or something. So I think that was also playing a part into his guilt that maybe if he had not been irresponsible and forgot, which we all do. I mean, it's nothing he should feel guilty over, but, you know, it's something we all do. But that's probably the thoughts that are going in his head. If I'd remembered my key that day, I could have gotten into the house. I could have distracted him. Wouldn't have shot my parents.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I thought. That's what we thought all his guilt was from before this episode. But now we realize there's this other thing where Sam's, maybe he thinks he accidentally told Sam to kill his dad.
Well, and then we keep hearing also, I mean, his, you know, in every episode, they're really pushing how much Tyler and his dad was not getting along. You know, we've seen that, you know, we've seen how they've been abrasive towards each other, and Tyler's been resistant, you know, to, you know, whenever his dad asks him to be friends with Sam, and he's like, you know, I'm not really asking you. And he's kind of forcing that on him. And apparently they for months had been, you know, in disagreement with each other. So, and I'm sure that, and then his dad ends up dying. And of course, you know, you always kind of wish, you know, if I had known that something was going to happen, I would have fixed my relationship with them. I would have done better, and I wouldn't have, you know, carried on or acted that way. And so I'm sure he has guilt over that as well. Like, why did I have to fight and argue with my dad? Just like when Kinsey was saying, when they were watching her dad tell her the bedtime story when she was a little girl, and her dad asks, he's like, oh, do you want another story? And she's like, no, I don't think so. And she starts to kind of fall asleep, and he just laughs, and she goes, I wish I'd asked for another.
And the whole bedtime story thing, I wasn't sure exactly what to make of that, but how the three kids got different versions.
And I have some thoughts about that in my next,
you know, Bodhi did. We don't know if he got a different version because he keeps falling asleep. But this part kind of relates to what you're just saying, because, you know, Kinsey gets the nice version where the sea monster eats everyone, but then barfs them all back up and they're fine. And because the fisherman did a nice thing and gave all the gold to their family members. Right. But Tyler gets what he considers the dark version, where his dad is saying, you know, the sea monster kills everybody and then makes the fisherman stay there so he'll remember what he always did. the pain he'd caused. And the dad says, the past is always with us, Tyler. You can try to run away, but it's always there. And I'm like, why is he getting on Tyler for that? Was it something that Tyler did that made his dad think he had to teach him that lesson, versus Kinsey, just maybe her lesson is make sure to be kind. But with Tyler, it's, you gotta always remember not to mess up because your past is with you, or something like that. But then when I watched it the second time, I noticed that his dad seemed to be more talking to himself. And we know that he has this weird, crazy past with whatever happened in high school where his friends drowned. And I think probably the keys had something to do with it. So maybe his dad is hard on himself. That was the impression I got, but he's kind of taking it out on his son. And when Tyler is talking to Sam earlier, he's complaining about, he says, I can't ever make a mistake. Every little thing becomes a moral lesson, which sort of hit home with me because I remember feeling that way with my mom, resentful of it. Why does everything have to be, you know, you telling me how wrong I am and what I need to learn? But now as a parent, I'm doing that with my own 8-year-old son, and he's already got that eyes glazed over look when I start trying to teach him something. And I'm like, but yes, I want to be able to teach you everything I've learned, you know? And he's like, ugh. So I'm on both sides of it. But anyway, it feels like to me that Tyler's dad, Rendell, had some of his own issues, and he was kind of unconsciously working it out by being hard on his son. That's what I got out of all of that.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad I'm not the only one that gets that glazed over look. I feel like when you're the kid, you're the teenager, and you start getting that, and you're like, oh my gosh. And then you swear that if you ever have kids, you are not going to do that. But I guarantee you that I have done that to my kid. She's grown now. She's an adult. I haven't stopped doing it, by the way, because I feel like there's always a lesson to be learned. She hates that so much. She'll just look at me and just be like, can I just mess up, please? Can I, like, why does everything have to be some moral story? And I'm like, no, we got to learn from this. And how are we going to do better next time?
I'm like, for me, I'm like, man, I really suffered through years, and then I figured something out, and it made my life so much easier. And if I just tell it to you right now, then you won't have to suffer like I did.
But they have to learn the hard way. You got to learn the hard way. Yeah, that's, I think, the only way I learned. And yeah, you think that you're going to pass on this great knowledge that, you know, I learned these lessons, so you don't have to learn them. I'm going to teach them to you. But no, my kid still has to, you know, hopefully she's learned something. She has done better than me. She's got a better track record
sometimes
than me so far. So I feel
think
like
they're
successful.
They're listening more than they might let on sometimes.
I feel like at least if I'm getting through 50% of the time, then I'm doing pretty good. If she just gains 50%
if I could
of what
get 50,
I tell her,
I'd be stoked.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about that. I know I'm not, you know, completely penetrating that head of hers. She's very stubborn. I don't know where she gets it from. But yeah, I get that too. But what I got from that, and this is actually, it's my number three. So I don't want to jump over your number three, because it's your turn. But what I got from the different storytelling was, I feel the theme that we're kind of getting through, like, some of the book and through the books, and I won't talk about anything in the book specifically, but I feel like what the idea is that memories are unreliable. And we get that because each of them are recalling a slightly different version. And I feel like that happens in real life. You know, you talk to two people about the same, you know, if you ask two people to, you know, who went through the same experience, and you get almost like two different versions, people remember it differently. And I think you had more of a deeper thought process to it, which makes sense. But to me, it was just to kind of demonstrate that how memories can be unreliable.
Well, it made me think, yeah, I don't know. I didn't even consider that, because I think this one reason why is it immediately reminded me of this scene in Walking Dead that stuck out with me, which was in season one, I think episode 4, we see Andrea and her sister Amy floating on a boat in the quarry where they all were.
Yes, and they got two different...
Yeah, they're talking about their dad taking them fishing. Mm-hmm. And they're like, he did this kind of lure. No, he did these kinds. And then it turns out that he taught Andrea how to make sure to catch the fish, and that it was about taking them home and eating them. But with Amy, they would always throw the fish back, mm-hmm. which I'm like, and he knew that eventually Amy's like, well, he knew that you needed to catch the fish and I needed to throw them back. And that was the first time they realized that their dad had done something different just based on their different needs. So mm-hmm. I was like mapping that onto this, but I that could have totally steered me wrong. I don't know.
No, I think that's right. I thought of that too. I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, well, he's telling them a different version because he knows his kids well enough that that's the version that they need to hear for some reason. They may not know that
but I
now,
think it's a little more pathological with Tyler, because the way at least the dad delivered it to him, it looked like he wasn't even paying that much attention to Tyler and he was more talking to himself.
Yeah,
like
he drifted off.
Sticks with you. Yeah
totally. Yeah, I like what you said though, but that's just where I was, because I feel like you know, I've kind of seen that before, you know, where you get kind
memory,
of
yeah
your memory is not always reliable and people remember things very differently. You'll hear different versions from, you know, you can see the same thing happening, you know, you get five people watching the exact same thing, but then you get different versions from each person. So that's kind of like what it was for
totally.
Me.
Totally. Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, sorry, I totally skipped ahead on your numbers. So
that's okay, because I kind of skipped ahead myself, but that's let's okay. have that be my number three too. So it's, you go ahead.
Oh, skipping right ahead. skipping along. Well, my number two, then, I wanted to talk about Bodhi and the ghost key. So this was really cool. I was looking forward. So I know we were both really stoked about getting to see the head key and how that was going to work. And just that was what we were both anticipating. But this was my second one. This was my runner-up so far, was the ghost key. And it was pretty much like I had imagined it to be. From the comic. So I think they did a pretty good job. I had a little bit of an issue, just a tiny, it didn't really take me out of it or anything, but the CGI Bodhi was a little off. I don't know. Was it a little weird to you?
Somebody else said that too. I think it was Pake or I forget, but I thought it was cool. It didn't look like it did in the book. It kind of reminded mm-hmm. me of the Sandman from Spider-Man 3, which I thought was a cool effect at the time, even though the movie wasn't great. But I don't know. Like, what did you think was wrong with it? Just looked too CGI or something?
Too CGI. Hmm. Like, you know, his face didn't quite look like his face. Like, had to look for a moment. I'm like, that's Bodhi, right? Because I feel like I had a pretty good feel for what the kid looks like. But I don't know. It wasn't bad. It was just maybe a little overdone, but maybe, you know, I mean, he's a ghost, so maybe it's appropriate, you know, maybe, you know, that's the effect that they were going for. It wasn't bad. It was just maybe a little over the top, because maybe it's like, oh, well, maybe that's why they didn't do the head key like they did in the comic, because they spent all their CGI on the ghost part when Bodhi's a ghost. I don't know. But anyway, it was still fun, you know, and it was really fun as he slips through the door and sees himself lying there. I think that was really well done and what I fully expected to happen. It's exactly how I imagined it to be. And I just thought that was like a typical kind of kid reaction. He's like, I'm floating.
Woo, yeah. And what I liked about the head key, I mean, the ghost key in the comic, and I think it kind of came across in the show too, is it's simultaneously kind of like, oh wow, suddenly he's got this freedom to fly around and it's like adventurous, but also this little kid's limp body is laying on the floor, and that's a little creepy.
Very creepy. Very creepy. Yeah. So I thought it was totally appropriate, you know, what you would expect a little kid to do. I think I'm an adult, and I think I would be doing the exact same thing. So I think it's appropriate no matter what. Woo. If you've got, you know, and you're swishing through the trees, and then he's, you know, kind of floating in front of Tyler. Hey, Tyler, look at me. I'm a ghost. So cute. Mm-hmm. I love that kid. He's so adorable.
He's so good.
But then he comes across this graveyard, swoops down, and ends up encountering his great-great-grandpa and has this little encounter with him. And the only thing I'm wondering this whole time is, why the heck didn't he tell Bodhi a little bit more about the danger of the keys? I mean, I don't know if he does later or if this ever comes back later. Maybe it doesn't. But I'm like, dude, you know, he just talks about, you know, oh, I met your dad. He used to come visit me quite often, him and Duncan. And I was like, So Duncan has done some stuff, but Duncan like has forgotten everything.
Apparently, yeah.
Apparently, anyway, he says that he doesn't remember anything. So I am so far taking that at face value.
Yeah, me
so
too.
So I thought, oh, okay, so they, you know, Bodhi gets that little piece of information. I feel like we need to kind of file that away.
Mm-hmm. Because that, like, he now knows that the two, that his dad and uncle use the keys. And so for us, that just sort of reinforces to me that I think the keys were probably involved with whatever happened to everybody in high school.
Mm-hmm.
It seems pretty clear that they were. That'd be kind of crazy if they weren't.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I thought it was, you know, a nice little encounter that he had with his grandpa. He seems like a nice old man. But then when he gets back, you know, which it was funny, by the way, whenever he comes back and Tyler is like, you know, oh my God, Bodhi. And he's trying to, you know, wake him up, and Bodhi comes back into his body and he jumps up and scared the hell out of Tyler. I thought that was a really great reaction.
Yeah, that was awesome.
It seemed very appropriate and I thought looked very authentic. So that was really good. But when he's getting in trouble again, little Bodhi, again, like, you know, you're supposed to tell us if you find any more keys and you can't just go using them. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. And it just, poor little Bodhi, his reaction, he's like, you know, well, I just wanted to see Dad again, you know, thought it would be a chance to see Dad. And it was like, oh man, that's just a little kid. You know, it's all like Bodhi's, you know, always seems to be, you know, we talked, I think, last week about how the kids are each in their own way kind of dealing, you know, with the trauma of losing their father and going through the process of grieving and moving into a new home, and how Tyler's handling it, how Kenzie's handling it. And Bodhi seems, you know, to just kind of go with the flow. And he's a happy-go-lucky kid and he's having a good time in this new house and he's exploring and he's finding these keys. And then this moment for me just kind of brought it all back, like, oh, just a little kid that just really misses his dad. And just
at first I thought, oh, well, wait a minute. You were flying around saying, I'm flying. You weren't looking for your dad. You're just saying that to get some sympathy. But then I realized, well, oh no, that's why he went straight to the cemetery, because he was maybe looking for his dad.
Yeah.
So I was being cynical.
Happens to the best of us.
Because I was wondering, why did you go to the cemetery? But yeah, I think he was probably looking for his dad. And we find out that only those who died on the property roam there. So he can't see his dad here. But maybe he'll see his dad later using this key.
I don't know. Might.
Yeah. Well, I also like that the painting where Bodhi found the key was of this great-great-grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
It was in his hand. And yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
it's good.
Fun little spots where all these keys are hidden, and thought that was fun.
So now that we have two more keys this episode, which one would you now want the most?
I still want the anywhere key.
Yeah, I think me too. I mean, I'd be really tempted. It's between the anywhere key, the head key, and the ghost key, but I'd really, really love to do the head key. So maybe if we could both get one and we could trade off every once in a while.
Yeah, I still, cool. I would at least want to do it one time just for
but
the
But if you
fun
had to
it,
choose but... just one, I yeah. do think I would still pick the anywhere key, but then I'd be kind of bummed that I didn't get to try the head key.
I know. I'd be like, well, can I try each of them out and see which one is cooler before I have to choose? Yeah. Because if you're going to have to be stuck with one for all time, and this is the only one that you're going to get, it would have to be the anywhere key. But I definitely want to try the ghost key. I definitely would want to try the head key, probably at least a couple of times, and straighten some shit out in there.
I might just pick the head key, though. I don't know. It'd be really tempting.
That would give like a whole other view of living inside your head. Because that's probably all I do. I just feel like I'm just going to sit here on my bed with the key in the back of my head, and I'm just going to live in my head.
I mean, it probably would be in my best interest to just take the anywhere key and not mess around with my head, but I would be tempted to mess around in there.
I would totally be messing around in there, probably make it worse than what it is.
Yeah, I know.
Just give me the anywhere key. Just let me go anywhere in the world.
Kill my anxiety and...
Yeah.
Then I'd be a total asshole or something.
Yeah. Kill my anxiety. That would be top of my list. Anyway, what is your number two?
I don't know. What is it? It was the Ghost Key and all about that. So,
oh, okay. What's your number one?
Number one is The Well Lady and the Flame Key.
All right.
And so we see her still being a glutton, stuffing her face with the powdered donut that she's for sure not going to pay for.
Nope.
Which I love. And she's looking up this house on the internet with some stranger's computer. Hey, it's my computer. Did she kiss him? Thank
yes.
you. Yes. She just does whatever the fuck she wants.
I love
it. And then it turns out she was doing that, of course, so she could see this place and then use the key to go there. And it turns out, I figured out, you know, after thinking about it for a second, that it's the house that we saw in the first episode where this guy, Mark Cho, we now know his name, burned himself up with the flame key. And later when we see Nina looking through Rendell's old yearbook, we see that guy, Mark Cho. We see all these friends of Rendell who for some reason are all together in the yearbook, not in alphabetical order. We see Rendell, we see Erin Voss, who I don't know if we've heard before, but I think she's one of the friends. We see Ellie, who we've met. She's become friends with Nina, and she's Rufus's dad. And we see Lucas, her boyfriend, Lucas Caravaggio, who apparently drowned, although she's like calling for him in the well. So now I'm wondering, what does she remember and what the hell is going on?
No kidding.
Right. And then we see the book stamped with a bunch of Omega, right? I think it's an Omega symbol from the Greek alphabet.
Yeah, that's pretty sure.
She remembers that Sam Lesser had an Omega tattoo when he killed Rendell. So there's all this mysterious stuff going on that I hope we're going to find out at least some of it by the end of the season. But anyway, back at Mark's house, she's looking through that safe. So she's trying to find the flame key. And it turns out this kid is outside wearing it around his neck. So that was a bit of a lucky coincidence. But I guess those kids rummage through that place or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess the kids, the key survived, which I don't know if that was Mark's intention, but it did survive and she was there. So she's trying to just gather as many of these keys as she can for whatever reason that we don't know yet. And we saw her kill the kid, push him into the subway, which I thought was very Stephen King. It reminded me of the Dark Tower.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. That's his prodigy that has written.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Written the prodigy material. But yeah, that escalated quickly. That escalated quickly. I was not expecting that.
She's not a good person.
No. No, and I think I think that's what we're supposed to be reminded of, you know, because I feel like we're only getting that in pieces, but it's just like another reminder, you know. It just seems like, oh, she's, you know, yeah, she's doing a dine and dash and she's stealing clothes and, you know, just kind of doing whatever the hell she wants without any consequences. And while that's not a good thing, this is when you really, again, get, oh, yeah, she's really bad.
She choked that dude to death last week. And I don't know, the way they're presenting her, maybe it's right for the tone of the series, but it feels like, oh, yeah, that's horrible. But it still has a certain bluntness to it, or not bluntness, but it doesn't seem as intense as I feel like it should for some reason. I don't know why. Like, she just pushed a innocent little kid in front of a subway train, and I thought it was horrible, but it still felt like I'm watching a kid's show for some reason.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they decided to be so extreme about that, was because it is kind of light, but we're just, you know, we have to go that far to remind you, because so much of it does seem kind of light that you have to be reminded. Yeah. I don't know. But it was shocking.
Anyway, now she, yeah, it was a little shocking.
I was very shocked. I was like, oh, was shit. That was a kid just.
And then she's like, anybody else? And then the other kids run away. It felt like she was in a Steven Spielberg movie to me, and then did a really shocking thing. I don't know. Something weird about it.
I'm still very intrigued by her. Yeah, I'm still very intrigued by her, though. I thought it was, you know, just when she's like, you know, you show me yours, I'll show you mine. you know, she's a very intriguing character, and I like her wardrobe. I think she stole some things out of my closet. She dresses exactly like I do.
Really? That's funny.
Yeah.
Cool.
Good boots. I swear I have those boots in my closet. It was really nice. Yeah, I'm intrigued by her. She's actually, that was actually my number one as well. Is, of course, I'm still calling her Echo at this point after what Bodhi calls her, but I know that I feel like she's got some different names, but that's who I'm still referring to her. I like when she's typing on the PC. You see how she's kind of like just doing the one finger thing? And I think kind of you wonder how long she was locked in that well house. I guess pre-PC days, you know, she's clearly not well-versed with computers.
She's new to it.
Yeah, so she's doing the one finger typing.
Maybe it's because she's a bit one-dimensional right now. And I'd like to feel like there's something deeper to her, and then it will move me more, the things that she's doing right now. It feels like when I used to write short stories in school. I was in a writing program, and they were pretty bad. And I tried to make a villain one time, and I just had him doing bad things, do bad things, and then everyone was scared of him. But he wasn't really a person. He was just this kind of caricature, you know? So I love the way the woman is playing it, but I guess I want some more color on what her motivations are and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
You're right. She is a little one-dimensional. So mm-hmm. I hope
so far.
Okay. Yeah. So far. I hope. Yeah. We're only three episodes in. We might get more of her, and maybe they'll flesh her out a little bit more. But I don't know. Maybe they're intentionally trying to make her a little mysterious. I mean, she is a mysterious character.
That's so true. Good
maybe,
point.
Maybe that's why.
And I don't need to. Yeah, I'm not feeling like super impatient for all these mysteries to be solved. I think they're doing a lot of things that I'm feeling really satisfied with. So I'm not like, hurry up and tell us everything.
I'm having fun watching her on her little adventures as she, you know.
Yeah, that I am too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fun part. Totally. I'm like, well, if I can't do it, I'm going to watch someone else do it. You know, steal some clothes and some jewels and.
Pushing
kids in front of the subways, those annoying brats. Off you go.
Right.
How dare you question my motives? Give me the damn key. Right. Off
anyone,
your head.
Any other kids want to question my motives?
Yeah. No. Line up. Living the dream. Anyway.
Give me another donut.
Yeah, give me another donut and a big old kiss. Mwah. Anyway, that was really good. Do you have any notes?
Yeah, a few. First off, I really like Band of Horses, and I was disappointed that they were mentioned, and as far as I remember anyway, there was no Band of Horses music.
Mm-hmm.
Man, they should have put some in at the end or something. Let's see. At the hockey game, Jackie, the girl that Tyler likes, invited Kinsey to sit with her and Eden. And I thought that was really nice. And I'm like, she's nice too. There's lots of nice kids in the show. Scott, Bodhi, Kinsey's pretty nice. Jackie. I like that. They don't all have to be jerks. What else? At the hockey game, there was that moment where the guy from the other team really checked this guy hard. And they said that was Chad Garland's all-star dickwad. I'm like, I bet we're going to see him again. Like conflict between him and Tyler, probably.
Yeah, probably another one.
We see that Logan has, that was Logan, right? That had two prosthetic legs.
Yep.
Did we know that before? I didn't
notice. I mean, you didn't notice after he keyed Javi's car and he's standing. I mean, it's a full body shot. Like Tyler's kind of standing out from the entrance of the school as he's walking out to the parking lot, and we see Logan keying Javi's car. And I mean, he's wearing, they're not short shorts, but they're like cut off jeans maybe to his knees. And you can clearly see he has prosthetic legs. But I mean,
sometimes I'm not very observant. I totally didn't notice that. Because when I saw it this time, I'm like, oh, it makes sense why he keyed that car now.
Yeah.
So we see that, yeah, Nina is presumably an alcoholic and she's sober now.
Mm-hmm.
So we got confirmation of that. I wonder if she'll relapse.
I think it's pretty good that she's held it together, knowing that she's lost her husband and going through
this.
Yeah. So that's good.
Nina, with Ellie, she mentions Bodhi's hanging out with his scary imaginary friend in the well house, and she's like looking worried. And then she goes to the well and calls for Lucas. And so I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And shouldn't you be like telling, if you do remember stuff? Well, I don't know. I was like, shouldn't she be telling Nina some of this? But then maybe she would just sound crazy. I don't know.
And she had a key. She had the key to the well house.
Oh.
And they made a point. They made sure that you saw that when she, because Bodhi had to squeeze in through, through the bars
or whatever.
Yeah, he had to, and Kinsey and Luke, what am I going to say, Lucas, what the hell? Ellie went to go look
Tyler.
For. Tyler, they couldn't get through there, but Bodhi squeezed through the bars.
Okay.
She had a key and actually opened it, and then she took that key as she started to look down the well, and they focused on her hand putting that key down, and then when her hand moved away, you could see the key. It looked like, it was hard for me to make, I didn't pause it, it was a little dark, so I don't know exactly what was supposed to be on there, but it kind of looked like it was almost like the top of a well, like it was in this circle, and it kind of looked like oh well, so that must be the well key.
Yeah, it just could have been a regular key. But now I'm questioning, because last time, you know, she was telling Nina about them, their friends having drowned and her boyfriend drowned. And I thought, well, maybe if there was something supernatural that happened, maybe she's like Duncan and she forgot it. But now I'm like, oh, well, she's calling for Lucas down this well. So does she actually remember stuff and she's not being straightforward with Nina, or what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like at least we've met Ellie, and she was a part of that tight group of Rendles that all hung together. And Mark Cho, who is the one that stabbed himself with that fire key, he had a key. So he had a key. It looks like Ellie's got a key. Who else of their friends that survived, I guess, could they also have keys?
Yeah, I mean, Rendell had at least the Anywhere key. Well, it was in a bracelet that he gave to Kinsey.
Mm-hmm.
And they're asking, like, Bodhi and Tyler are asking the same kind of questions that we're asking. Why didn't Dad show us the keys? Maybe he forgot, like Mom forgets, or maybe he didn't want us using them. But Great Grandpa said they had fun with them. So, and then one of them's like, why did he hate this place so much? So they're all kind of wondering the same kind of things that we're wondering.
Mm-hmm. Is that all your notes?
That's all I got. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, okay. The only other note, because we covered a lot of my notes as we were talking, but one thing that I did want to notice, I guess it's kind of like an Easter egg, and that was, you were talking earlier about the yearbook. The yearbook quotes, I didn't get all of them, but there was some really great detail while Nina was going through Rendell's yearbook, and mm-hmm. there were quotes next to their pictures. In the yearbook, she was looking at them. So you mentioned Erin Voss, which we haven't met yet, but she had a Mother Teresa quote that had to do with echoes. Rendell's is about Peter Pan, which we know Peter Pan was a boy who could fly and never grew up.
Yeah, Ellie, and that ghost totally reminded me of Peter Pan, the ghost scene.
Yeah, totally. Ellie's was an Oscar Wilde quote about keeping love in your heart. Lucas's is from Metallica, which was "Life is ours, we live it our way." Which,
so kind of a punk kind of a quote.
Yeah, a little selfish maybe.
Rebel maybe, yeah.
Yeah, and then Mark Cho's is a Darth Vader quote about faith.
Interesting.
So I didn't get all of them, but that was what I got so far. So I don't know. Maybe that means something. I feel like mm-hmm. it has to mean something. I feel like they're probably good about details like that.
Yeah.
So
at least, it's indicative of their personalities.
Right. Okay. Well, that was really great. Good top five and good notes. That was a really good episode. So.
Yeah, it was. This is my favorite episode so far. I really
loved it. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, good. That I'm so happy to hear that. I know that you were kind of unsure in those first couple and weren't quite sure what to, you know, where it was going or what your thoughts were. But I'm glad that you really like this one. I hope that continues for both of us.
I know. I mean, I was talking to Karen Chi, one of the listeners, about it, and she's seen them all, and she wasn't being spoilery, but we were talking about the sort of WB-ness of it, or Dawson's Creek-ness of it. And I think I can glean that it maybe goes a little bit in that direction for a while. So I'm kind of getting ready for that. But then by the end, it's more interesting. So I don't know if that's exactly right, but that's kind of what I'm getting myself ready for.
All right. Well, with that being said, I do have one item for the news this week. So this is from Screen Rant. So Lock and Key is about to unlock some new potential with a crossover that was just announced with the Sandman universe, courtesy of DC Comics and IDW Publishing. The comic book is officially called Lock and Key, Hell and Gone, and will be written by Lock and Key team Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez. There was a promotional video that was teasing the new crossover that was shared on several social media platforms. So if you go out there and look for it, I'm sure that you'll find it. So Lock and Key was first published in 2008 by Hill and Rodriguez, which of course, as we're watching the story, and if you've read the comics, the story follows the Lock family as they unlock the secrets of Key House after they're forced to move into the ancient mansion following the death of their patriarch. Once there, they begin to discover keys with magical abilities. The Sandman was first published in 1988 by Neil Gaiman, and it features a rotating team of artists, which include the likes of Sam Keith, Jill Thompson, Dave McKean, and many more. The sprawling story centers on the Morpheus, the embodiment of Dream, as he reclaims both his power and realm after decades in captivity. So the announcement of the crossover is excellent news for fans of either series, with Lock and Key gaining more fans through its Netflix series, and The Sandman itself awaiting its own Netflix adaptation.
I think this is really cool. I never got into Sandman, and Neil Gaiman, for me, he's good, but it doesn't totally feel like my thing. He's really into kind of fairy tale type things with the darkness to it, or myth and things like that. And I like him, but I just never felt drawn in to go and read all of those. But even so, I still think this is really cool. And I think these two universes will probably mesh really well together.
Yeah.
Have you read any of those, Sandman?
I have not read the Sandman, but I feel like I need to, because I have not read everything of Neil Gaiman, but you know, I was a huge fan of American Gods.
Me too. The first season. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah. That was just absolutely brilliant. And what they were able to portray on screen was amazing. And I mean, you want to talk some stuff, you know, we were talking about Legion and yeah, how it was kind of trippy. Go watch season one of American Gods, people.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, I'm a big fan of that. And I've heard really great things. There's lots of people in the Patreon Facebook group that are really big
stoked,
super stoked and excited about that, and have good things to say about the Sandman series. So I don't know, I think it would be interesting to try and pick that up before they do the adaptation, and at least try it.
It's long. I think there's many issues.
But
it's a whole bunch of different stories, you know. Yeah, it'd be worth checking out. I'd be curious to see what you think. Maybe I'll try to get back into it too.
Yeah, I think.
But I'm definitely getting this Lock and Key one.
Oh yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Anything that comes out with that, I always pick it up.
Yep, absolutely. I'm definitely digging the comics as I'm going through them. They're just so good.
Good.
Really digging those. Okay, well, that was the only item I had that was not spoilery that would ruin the entire season for me that I was able to find this week. So it is so hard when you do a Netflix show, because everything's out within like 2 days. You're like, okay, here's the series so far. And you're like, no.
I know, with headlines about, what'd you think of this thing that happened in the finale?
Yeah, they're like, oh, let's talk about, you know, all the show. And it's like, no, I can't talk. Let's talk about this episode, not that whole show. I haven't finished. So yeah, it's hard. But anyway, so that's the only item that I have. Now we will go into our listener feedback, our listener responses. Do you want to take that first one for me?
Sure. Jennifer Dryman Hollander, hey Jennifer, says, we watched it last night and I finally listened to your first two podcasts this morning. I was feeling a tad lost on a couple things and you guys helped explain them. I'm with Jason. It feels a little like lost because I feel like I already have so many questions and I don't trust that they'll all be answered. Hope that's not the case. I'm wondering if the dad's many versions of the fisherman bedtime story is going to relate to what happened to his friends as teenagers. Ooh, interesting. Maybe he doesn't remember and it comes back to him differently each time he does have some memories, or he does remember and he's preparing his kids in some ways about the keys. Love the magic of the keys and I can't wait to see what they all do. Well, you know, I can't remember if I said this exactly, but as I was reading this story in the comics, I felt like, oh, this is like Lost because they're bringing up a lot of mysteries, but unlike Lost, by the end of the story of the comics, I was totally satisfied with the way they laid it out. And I thought, this is how you do this kind of a thing. So hopefully the show will deliver in that same way.
I hope so. Hope they got it covered. That was great. Next one we have is from Doug Fick. He says, well, just when you thought this was a little edgier than the Wizards of Waverly Place streaming now in Disney Plus, Echo throws in the effed up move by shoving the rando kid under the subway train. How frosty. How did this kid get the key, however? But then we go right back to teen drama after Tyler pulls a Daniel Russo, gets into a fight after the game, and gets suspended from the team. However, the comment to Lesser about killing his dad cannot be the reason it happened. The keys are. Tyler may just think it was. And inside Kinsey's head is a shopping mall? Seriously? I bet a man wrote this episode. How sexist and stereotypical. On behalf of Rima Jo, I am offended.
I think, yeah, my headspace is more likely to be a mall than Rima's. An Apple store, anyway.
That's for sure. Oh, he goes on. But then it gets dark again with the fear monster. Did not see that coming. But then it gets cliche again with the mom being a recovering alcoholic. Then back to silly with Bodhi being Casper the ghost. Apparently no flying lessons needed. But then we get a sweet moment with Tyler and Bodhi and the stars on his walls and a tie-in from the dad to Lesser with the Omega symbol. And finally, a pretty badass moment with Kinsey facing her fear monster, fucking it up and burying it in the woods. This show is quite back and forth for me. I'm in a glass case of emotion. Looking forward to the discussions. Question, what would the inside of your heads look like?
An Apple store.
So minimalist and clean and efficient.
Yeah, with lots of gadgets everywhere.
Lots of gadgets.
And a bunch of zombie versions of me staring into screens. Numbing the pain.
I feel like there'd be a version of you in a corner with your VR, and then there's another version over on like your iPad. And
That was very well written, Doug. I like your writing.
Yeah, good job, Doug.
Lindsay Schlicht says, still feeling pretty CW to me, but then we throw kids off subway platforms and have other kids flashing back to telling their dad's murderer to kill their dad, and it feels darker. Then we have glittery Bodhi ghost floating around to Harry Potter music, and I feel like I'm watching a kid show again. Just can't figure this one out. It's definitely the keys themselves that remain the point of interest in the show. The head key is super cool. I think my control freak OCD head key would be just like Kinsey's. The jumping around from memory to memory, thought to thought, also makes me think very much of the chaos of the teenage girl brain. Bodhi saying, I'm floating, was too funny. Kinsey bearing her fear monster was creepy and probably a bad idea, judging by the well lady's pleased expression. Oh, yeah. She's like, oh, boy. Get the popcorn.
Yeah. Next one is from Pake Allen. He says, another great episode. Love the way they did the head key. Their own little worlds is a really cool idea. And anyone complaining about it not being dark enough, Echo straight up murdered the shit out of that little boy at the beginning of the episode without batting an eye. And Kinsey's fear was actually pretty damn creepy. Random side thought, it's crazy how much Emilia Jones and Jackson Robert Scott, Kinsey and Bodhi look alike. They could seriously pass for siblings. It's pretty wild. Only complaint I had was the ghost Bodhi CGI was rough. They could have really done better with that, but they probably blew the VFX budget with Kinsey's brain mall.
Yeah, I agree, Paik. This one was plenty dark. And I actually like the shifts in tone because it feels like these kids are sweet and big-hearted and they've been through a trauma and there's some scary things. But to get all of that, you need to have the different, you know, colors of their lives, how their lives are and everything.
Yeah. We actually have a couple of voicemails to get to, but before we get too far into the voicemails, we do have a few other pieces of feedback, which you don't have a copy of, Jason, because I'm getting on Facebook to get them. Do you have it up? Okay. Yeah. So you had a really good idea.
I printed it out. Hopefully it'll be the same as yours.
Oh, I hope so. I just have it pulled up on my app, so let's hope. So you had a really good idea to kind of do a quick poll with our listeners before we recorded tonight and ask the question if we used the head key on you and went inside into your headspace, listener, what would we see? The first one we have from Greg Schwamm says, he says, video games, books, comic books, family, friends, military. I feel like my brain room would look like an attic or basement, and there are boxes everywhere. And the ones I think about just appear instead of having to go through each one to discover the contents, which I've done several times, and the memories just flow out. And then it's 3 hours later, and I haven't found what I was initially looking for. That's funny.
Paik says, TV shows and podcasts on constant stream and a room full of wrestling matches going on.
That's great. Steve Brown says you would see head games and other 80s music.
Head games. Jenny Shoot says it would be a trivia show with only questions about useless things you don't know why you know. Like the loose skin on your elbow is called a weenus and apple seeds contain cyanide.
Gosh, I love that. I feel like I there's probably a part of my brain, if you find yourself in that part of the maze, you're going to stumble upon that, a bunch of useless trivia information. Mm-hmm. And then a big pop culture section. Yeah. Lindsay Schlick says dogs, tattoo ideas, rage, LOL.
I forgot Doug. He says if it was high school, untimely, never mind.
Maybe we don't want to go there. That was really great, guys. Some really great feedback there. And as I mentioned, we do have some really great voicemails. Can't wait to listen to these. You guys never disappoint. The first one that we have is from Greg.
Hey, Rima and Jason. This is Greg about Head Games, the third episode in Lock Key. Got just a few points. So one, I don't think there's really any question anymore about Echo being a villain or a bad person or having no moral compunction, straight up throwing a kid in front of a subway train, like that pretty much puts you in the bad column every time. I thought it was interesting that she was able to look up Mark Cho. I'm assuming that Mark Cho is the guy that at the beginning of the series who fired himself, but then obviously the key survived. Now she's got those two. And then she's obviously looking for the head key. I thought that we really, really went dark, especially in Kenzie's head, even though it was a bright mall. I mean, the end of the episode where she is dragging and burying the body of her fear. That's a pretty heavy concept, and there's very much a Stranger Things vibe from that scene. And then I feel like there might be something similar with that when Tyler gets the head key and he has his anger. Like, I don't know how you murder your anger, but it might end up being a pretty fair fight, especially if you can be hurt in your own head or in someone else's head or something. Anyway, I'll go ahead and cut this off. Look forward to hearing the podcast. And all right, have a good one. Bye.
I guess it's a little bit like that Pixar movie. What was it? Inside or something? Inside?
Inside Out, maybe?
Inside Out. Yeah. With your emotions in there.
Just
I didn't. Went out and kill it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so
the little cartoon.
Not nice.
That, yeah, Tyler goes in his head and it's that little red guy screaming. Lewis Black, I think.
That's appropriate. I didn't actually watch the movie.
I
only saw
who voiced it.
It's well, it's totally appropriate. Lewis Black's like the angriest right. comic. He's totally hilarious. Anyway, that was great. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
Next call we have is from our good friend, Anwen, from New Zealand.
Hi, guys. Well, you know, in New Zealand, we are a British colony, and in some ways we've moved on, but some things we have kept. And one of those things is scones. You can't go into a cafe or a bakery in New Zealand without a good variety of scones available. There's the plain scone, which is really good with jam and cream, and that's sometimes called a Devonshire tea. Then there's the date scone, which is your plain scone with dates in it. And then there is the very, very popular cheese scone, and that is the scone with heaps of cheese in, baked into it, but also cheese on the top of it. And all of these scones are really good, heated up with heaps of butter on it. The cheese scone is also quite good with a little bit of Marmite. Sometimes people like to mix it up and have the cheese scone with some butter and jam. And if you really want to give your cheese scones a bit of a kick when you bake them, you can put a little bit of cayenne pepper or chili pepper in them, and it just really intensifies the flavor of the cheese. So you're both invited to come over to my house in New Zealand and have some scones anytime you like. Bye.
I've got this anywhere key right here, so I'll come over to your place and then we'll head off to New Zealand.
Yeah, can you swing by here, pick me up first, and then we can both hop over to New Zealand and visit Anwen? I would love
like,
that.
Hello, like Lenny and Squiggy popping through our door.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, well, have you ever had an American scone, Anwen? Because they're not as good, and I'd be curious to know if, at least in my opinion, they're fine, but they're big and dry. And I think, yeah, British / New Zealand scones are probably better.
Yeah, she's made me very hungry.
Me too, I know.
Wishing I had a really good, genuine scone the way that they're supposed to be made. Like you said, I don't think that the Americanized version is that bad, but I just feel like we probably just don't get it quite right.
Well, you know, have you ever had a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit at McDonald's?
Yeah.
The scones I had in England were not quite exactly like that, but more like that than the scones you get here. Huh. A little fluffier and rounder.
See, that sounds amazing. That's exactly what I want it to be. But here we don't have that. Unless there's like a genuine like bakery that like, hey, we have the real thing, come here.
Yeah,
someone send one to me.
Up.
Yeah.
San Francisco has everything. I need to find it.
Yeah, there's got to be a great patisserie that would have like what a genuine scone, what it should be, not what we're used to with the Americanized version. And I'm not a big fan of them just because they are so dry.
Yeah.
So
it's like eating a big thing of sawdust. So what if we did a podcast on Great British Bake Off? What would we say? That'd be pretty fun, wouldn't it?
It's a good
talk
bake.
About who we like and what we'd want to eat the most.
I would love to do that. I love that show. I'm absolutely obsessed.
It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
I can sub in again.
Yeah. I don't think I can get Sean into it at all. So
it'd be interesting to try to podcast about a show like that.
I think it will. You know what? You got to try it, right? You know, it might fail. It might suck. I don't know, but at least you can say you tried. We had a lot of people in the group that, you know, this last season when the Great British Bake Off was on, we had quite a participation level, you know,
yeah.
in the group alone.
We might even be able to interview some of them.
Yeah. Ooh.
That'd be cool.
Oh my gosh. I would so fangirl on some of those guys. Oh my gosh. If I got to talk to even just Paul Hollywood too.
Right, we
can get a handshake
and have them stare at us.
Yeah, I want a handshake. And then I'll cry.
Gotta bake something.
Ugh, no, I can't take the pressure. It can't be bread week, anything but bread week. Anyway, sorry, we digress. Sorry. Yep. Got talking about food. This is we have to steer from food, because that just totally gets my brain off track. I'm all about food. Put some food in front of me, I'm a happy girl. The next phone call that we have is from our good friend, Steve Brown.
It's my head. I'll know. Hey, Jason and Rima, it's Steve. This is for Head Games. Head Games! Old Foreigner song. Anyway, I noticed something, and I went back and rewatched the beginnings of the first two episodes, because there's an image of the key going into Bodhi's head just before the lock and key title card appears. So I went back and looked, but the first two episodes just had Key House there. So I don't know if that's going to be a running thing. Maybe each episode will have a different key or something. We'll see. But I did leave some feedback on the feedback on the Facebook page when I initially first watched this episode. So I hope you guys have read that already. But that opening is just crazy. I love that they solved, or didn't solve, but they resolved the whole Bodhi's head thing pretty quickly. They went to the toy chest. They saw, he says, oh, that's my glee, and I know, and all this. So that was really cool. I think it was cool that there was a different way for Kenzie to get into her head, and I would assume everybody's got a different way that you get into their head. And Tyler, you know, that was an interesting memory he had of his dad, but also the memory of Sam Lesser, his dad telling him that real dark story, but then him, Tyler, making that statement to Sam about kill my dad when you do, that I wonder if he's harboring some guilt on that. And of course that ending with Kinsey going in and getting her fear, or whatever that manifestation was, and then killing it, or dragging it out of her head, killing it and burying it. I wonder if it's going to come back again. Okay, can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
Awesome. My prediction is it will come back, because they made a point of showing it wriggling around.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
That's my thoughts on it too, but I don't know anything. But I feel like it's too easy. Too easy. Okay, really great feedback, guys. We've gotten some really great feedback these last couple weeks. So keep it coming, guys. More voicemails, more Facebook feedback. If you guys want to email us, I want it all. So thanks, everyone, for participating. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Okay, so the next part of the podcast is our comic talk portion. So if you guys don't want to hear about anything from the comics, or if you do and don't care about that, then keep listening. But here is your last chance to skip ahead a couple minutes while we kind of dive into a little bit of comic talk. So I know that you mentioned before you had read them once a long time ago, but you didn't do like it's not a rewatch, I guess a reread of the comics. So what do you remember, or do you have any thoughts about this episode in comparison to the differences in the comic?
I mean, one thing that really stands out is the whole head key thing, and mm-hmm. how, like I talked about last week, you stick the key in your head and it opens up like a cookie jar, and you can, but when you look inside, we didn't mention this last time, but you see not like a brain or anything like that. You see like objects, but they're miniatures, if
yes.
I remember right.
You're
and
right.
You can put things in or take things out. Like you can take a memory out, or you could take a memory out of your head and put it in somebody else's and then they'll have it or something like that. I guess Kinsey takes out her fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what it was in the form of. Do you?
It just looked like this tiny little like miniature creature. It didn't really look okay. like Kinsey, but it was like just
like
this little
her.
Dark
but
little
she just
creature
knew.
Yeah, she knew, and she plucked it right out and stuck it in a jar and kept it like yeah. by her bedside.
Okay, so I, you know, when I saw Bodhi open that chest, my first thought was, they're ruining it. This is, I love this part and they're ruining it. But then I realized, well, half or more of what I like about the concept isn't just the physical way that they did it in the comic, but just the idea of getting to go inside your own headspace and see what's there and change things and see how it affects you. So they're still holding on to that. And then I started to think too, well, the way they're doing it in the show, where you actually fully go into the memories, or you fully go into this whole environment of your headspace, it makes it a little more scary, like especially when you have to fight your own fear and it's this rah, snarling thing. So there's definitely an upside to the way they're doing it in the show. And I'm starting to think maybe it wasn't just because of the limitations of the graphics or whatever, that they actually thought it would be more, more scary and bigger to do it this way, you know, and get to actually explore a space and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's cool. I think it's good. It would have been fun to see it like in the comics, but I actually think it's probably better the way they're doing it in the show.
Do you want to hear what Carlton Cuse had to say about why they changed up for the TV show?
Yeah.
So he says, when they asked him about the differences, he says, "We identified that early on as one of the biggest challenges because Gabriel had drawn this incredible splash panel with Bodhi's head. And in a comic, you literally can open someone's head, like the hood of a car, and look inside. And that just felt really gruesome and impossible to do in a television show. So we had to figure out how to translate that. And so we came up with this idea that we would have these doors that would lead into a sort of metaphorical interpretation of what each character's head looked like inside." And he said, with Kinsey's head scene, he said it was influenced by one of your favorite movies, haha, Jason, Christopher Nolan's Inception. He says for Bodhi, it was derived in a large part of what Gabriel had drawn. It was the environment full of video games, toys, and bouncy things, and arcade. And for Kinsey, we came up with this weird mall, in part, I think, because they were inspired by Inception, which was a movie about worlds within worlds, worlds of thought worlds, that kind of thing. He said, I think particularly the up tilt shot in the mall was a very clear homage to Inception with the upside down escalators.
Hmm. Well, it sounds like then they actually did do it this way just because they didn't think they could make it look right, or he said it was too gruesome and impossible. So I guess they just didn't think they could do it justice or that it would look right. But even so, I still think there's upsides to having it be an environment that you can physically go in and explore, and mm-hmm. versus just reaching into a head and pulling out little miniatures. Although I did love that from the comic, but either way, both ways, they still get a lot of the upside of getting to like physically interact with their sort of psychological concepts and things like that.
I agree. So I think it works for the screen for sure. Mm-hmm. And I was worried, and I thought I was going to be disappointed, because I really, when you see it in the comic, you know, with their head, like the top of their head, looks like they're going to have brain surgery. Like somebody just like completely removed the top of their skull.
But it's like a dollhouse or something. You see.
Yeah. Like they, and I think that would be kind of hard because everything would then kind of be in miniature. And so maybe everything being in miniature, maybe wouldn't translate as well. Kind of like with Kinsey's fear is miniature. Like she just kind of reaches in, or like they still have the thing like where they're kind of outside of themselves, you know, like they're sitting there
looking
into their brain. Yeah. So there's kind of still that part of where you're kind of like outside of yourself and visiting your brain. So that's when Kinsey kind of looks into her own brain and plucks her fear out. And it's this little miniature and she can plop it into a jar. I feel like that maybe wouldn't translate as well, you know, actually looking into someone's head and seeing all these little miniatures. It actually becomes more vibrant and more real, the way that they're
like
doing
it's
it
more
on the show.
It's much scarier for instead of plucking a little creature out of her head, for her to have to go and grab this thing that's her same mm-hmm. size and that's growling at her and whack it and bury it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think they did a pretty good job. I was worried, but I think they're handling it really well.
So what about the ghost key? I don't remember all that much about that. It seems like Bodhi, maybe this comes later where he's like trapped somewhere away from his body. I'm probably giving stuff away. But anyways, what about what we've seen so far? Anything else stand out that's different?
I was thinking about that and there's probably someone screaming at me right now as they're listening.
Sorry, I didn't put you on the spot.
No, it's okay. No, I thought
he looked
about
like Casper in the book, I remember.
Yeah, he looked a little, I mean, he looked like himself, but himself, he kind of like transparent, you know, it kind of had this, kind of this Casper-esque effect. So I feel like it was pretty true to that. You know, like I said, when He steps through, like, and I love how they kind of show it in a slow kind of motion when he, after he opens the door and his foot starts to go through, and it's like really slow. And then all of a sudden there's this really quick transition where his ghost self and then his body just plop. I mean, yeah, I feel like plop. That was, yeah, just that was like, for me, plucked right out of the comics. So for me, that was the same. And it's exactly what I expected. And I was really excited to see it because I thought that's pretty spot on. Now, there were some differences in like there as of yet, like I said, I have not finished the comics yet. But when I first saw the ghost key and Bodhi using it in the comics, he did not visit his grandfather. The great grandfather was not. He did not visit a cemetery and did not see the great grandfather. So that to me was new. Now, if that happens later, I know that they're kind of mixing some things.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I know that they're mixing things. Like they're plucking, you know, little pieces out of different parts of the comic. They're not really staying in sync, you know, in the order of things. So if that comes later, I'm just not aware of it yet. But for me, it was really great. It was pretty similar.
I know there's a lot with Lucas later, and there's something I could say that would really spoil a lot, so I won't, because we're not that far in the comic yet.
yeah I feel like some of that's definitely going to come into play. So yeah,
you can and see then, by the pictures of him that he looks the part.
definitely And I think we've talked a little bit about the differences in Tyler, Tyler's character, between how he kind of is being portrayed in the comics and how he's a little bit different in the show. You know, I thought that kind of come across a little bit more in this episode, but I like the differences. So I think that we're kind of seeing a little bit more of a mature Tyler in the show than what we saw in the comics. Even if he doesn't always use it, I feel like he's still kind of mature beyond his years a little bit. And think they've, again, just done a really outstanding job with the casting. And like one of our listeners mentioned in their feedback, talking about how Kinsey and Bodhi, I mean, you put them side by side and they look like they're related. I think all three of them look like they're related.
Yeah.
And they did a great job. And I'm pleased. So...
yeah, totally. Yep.
The only other thing, and this isn't really anything specific to the comic or whatever, but because I didn't want to mention it when we were talking about some of the other things and talking about how there's differences in the comic versus the show. So I put it here in the comic talk. When this, to me, was almost like a little Easter egg. To me, I thought it was like a homage to, because they didn't do the head key like they did in the comic. This scene, in my opinion, was a reference to that. And when Bodhi, when he's just before he hears the whispering and right before he finds the ghost key, he's in the kitchen and he's in the cookie jar, and the cookie jar has the lid off of it.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, he's the lid's off of it, and then he puts the lid back on. And to me, I was like, that looks like a little reference to, because it's exactly what it looks like in the comics, kind of. It looks like someone literally just lifts up the top of their head like the top of a cookie jar. So I thought that's their little tribute. Like, okay, guys, we know that we're not doing this for you. Here's your little, you know, reference to that. So that's what it was for me. I don't know if anyone else got the same or...
I'm going to go back and watch that now.
Yeah, I thought it was cute. It was just a nice little scene. He's like eyeballing that cookie, like, but all I could see was that cookie jar. It's like the head key from the comic. But anyway, lots of fun. Did you have anything else you want to say about the comic?
No.
Awesome. Okay. Well, so next week.
Next week, we'll be covering episode 4 of Lock and Key, called The Keepers of the Keys. Sporting a new hairdo and attitude, Kinsey takes a chance with Scott by sharing what's going on inside her head. Well, that could mean anything.
Yep.
You can share it by going through that revolving door. Tyler tries to impress his crush. I'm sure that'll go fine.
I feel like that would be just a good way just to lay it all out on the table. It's like, you want to know who I am? Here you go. Pop in the head key and say, here you go. Take it or leave it. this is who I am.
Don't mind all the porn over there.
Yeah, ignore that dark corner behind the curtain over there. Oh gosh, got me giggling. yeah, not a bad way to go. Anyway, so we're really excited for you to follow us into Geek House. But until then, you can follow us on Twitter at StrangeTCast.
You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/StrangerTCast. And you can check us out on Instagram at Strange_Indeed_Pod.
You can email us at StrangerThingsCastPod@gmail.com. And you can also find us on the TV Time app.
You can find Strange Indeed and a bunch of other great podcasts at podcastica.com. Have you left a review for Strange Indeed on Apple Podcasts? Why not?
Do it. You should. Do it now. Do it today. Do it right now.
As Emperor Palpatine would say, do it.
That was a good Emperor Palpatine. And you can find... He inspires me. Does he inspire you in your everyday? That's good to know. Over to the dark side. Feel bad for your boys. Well, you can find all of Jason's podcasts on Podcastica, such as The Walking Dead Cast, which, hey, it's back.
It's back. Season 10 is back after the hiatus. And if you want to feel really claustrophobic, watch this week's episode where they're in a cave going through some really tight passages. And a lot of listeners are like... They're like skeeved out by it. Like they can't even watch it.
Wow. So you guys had a good time on that one, huh? It was you and Lucy this week.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I think I mentioned it last week, but Karen's just not into The Walking Dead anymore. So I think it's going to be a lot of me and Lucy. She's done.
Yeah, I understand. And Lucy's great. Yep. Lucy's fantastic. Yeah. So yeah, go out and check out The Walking Dead Cast, since The Walking Dead is back with the second half. Hoping it's a great half.
Yeah. And for people who don't know, Karen and I are still podcasting. We're doing the Jason and Karen show, but you have to be a Patreon member. You could just sign up for 1 month if you want and listen to all the ones we've done so far, but it's really fun.
Signing up for like
Netflix.
Yeah, I was gonna say sign up for like HBO or Showtime, binge it for the 7-day free trial and dump it.
Right. Anyway. All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Until next time, I'm Rima.
And I'm Jason.
And Jennifer Hollander is Strange Indeed.
Is she?
Very.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.